I'm J.G. Michael, and this is Parallax Views.
Hello, this is Mike Swanson, and in a few moments, you're going to listen to another segment of Parallax Views. But before you do that, let me tell you about my new book, Why the Vietnam War. It's a sequel to my previous book called The War State, which has lots of positive reviews and Amazon's been out for years. But this one is a more detailed case study of how American empire, national security state operate using Vietnam. And I believe it shows also how things work today, how policy is actually made and why. So grab the book on Amazon.com, Why the Vietnam War.
Hey there, Parallax Views listeners. On this edition of the program, we continue our Reflections on Afghanistan series, this time with retired CIA analyst and co-founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, Ray McGovern. And Ray has a lot to say about the war in Afghanistan, the withdrawal, the generals that he believes should be held accountable for what this war has wrought for America and Afghanistan, and the parallels between Afghanistan and Vietnam. All that and more on this edition of Parallax Views that continues our explorations and reflections on the 20 years of U.S. military intervention in Afghanistan. Welcome to Parallax Views. Former CIA analyst, great anti-war protester, and one of the people who I think has the best anecdotes about George Bush Sr. Calling the neocons the crazies in the basement of Middle East policy. That story has always stuck with me. Ray McGovern, how are you doing today?
Doing well.
So I wanted to have you on the show because of the recent developments in Afghanistan with the withdrawal and whatnot. You have an article up at antiwar.com saying that we need to hold the generals accountable. But before we get into all of that, maybe you could tell my listeners a little bit about a concept that you've spoken of recently called the Mickey Mat and how that ties into your views on Afghanistan.
Well, this is the all-important force that is running our country. Eisenhower, back in, gosh, it's 60 years ago now, when he left office, he said that the important threat to American democracy was the growth and the power, whether it was intended or unintended, of what he called the military-industrial complex. We had built up this war machine, World War II, and it just wouldn't quit, right? It found enemies everywhere and didn't have to look very far. The Soviet Union was a very real threat. So what he said was, look, this military-industrial complex that speaks for itself is going to rule the roost, so to speak, unless there's an informed citizenry that knows what's going on and can stop it. Okay, 60 years ago. Now, as I looked at what's been happening over the last, well, decade or two, I realized that military-industrial complex, yes, still obtains, but it's a much wider, a much more insidious entity right now. And so I coined this phrase, which the likes of Stephen Cohen, a brilliant Russian historian, really like and endorsed, Mickey Mat. Now, if you got a pencil, rhymes with, well, it doesn't rhyme, but think Mickey Mouse, sorry. Then you can remember it. Mickey Mat, military industrial congressional intelligence media academia think tank complex. Now, what did I say? Media. Well, same reason Eisenhower said media. It's the cornerstone, it's the fulcrum. If you don't control the media, it doesn't work. Okay. If you don't control the media, then people think that there's a great fit from Russia and from China, and that you have to spend more than 50 cents out of every taxpayer dollar that we pay for defense. Okay, that's the Mickey Mat. I'll say it again: military, industrial, congressional, intelligence, media, academia, think tank complex. The other words explain themselves. I submit that they're fully as operative as the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower talked about.
And out of curiosity, would you say the Mickey Mat is similar to a concept that I know Obama's deputy national security advisor Ben Rhodes talked about, called the blob, or the sort of DC foreign policy consensus? Is that part of the Mickey Mat, or is it similar or different?
I don't like to comment on folks like Rhodes, so I'll leave him to explain what he meant himself. He doesn't explain himself very well, and what he meant by the blog is what you just said. It hardly explains in a distinct way what's really going on. And I should have added, of course, that presidents themselves are circumscribed by the Mickey Mat. There are limits to what they can do, and that's part of the story on Afghanistan.
That's what I wanted to get into next. What do you think our general takeaway should be from the military adventure in Afghanistan, and what are your thoughts on how it has been handled by previous administrations? But first, I guess the general takeaway, what lessons should be learned from this military escapade?
That the top generals, admirals in our military are totally inept, corrupt, misplaced. This is not new. Think about how the generals and admirals are chosen. How are they chosen? They are chosen by other generals and admirals and the politicians with whom they curry favor. Now, I go back a ways, okay? I was around during Vietnam. I made captain in U.S. Army Infantry Intelligence. Colonel Doug McGregor made colonel. Of course, he was a little behind me in years. I suggest you listen to what McGregor is saying today and yesterday. He's calling the military inept. He's calling them to. He's saying they should be held accountable, fired. That the way these generals get to be generals is itself corrupt. Now, this goes back. I can tell you that during Vietnam, General Westmoreland, who was head of the military, the activity there, all our forces, he built the forces up to 530,000, right? Now, he knew that the enemy, that is the Viet Cong, the communists in South Vietnam, outnumbered the 530,000 U.S. troops that we had in various categories, and he falsified the record. He told his intelligence people there could be no more than 299,000 enemy in South Vietnam. Okay. Now, my colleague, Sam Adams, and other people in CIA did the figures, worked with the data and came up with a figure between 500 and 600,000 troops, okay? Now, I knew that was the case because Sam Adams, my colleague, shared a cable with me. It was dated August 20, 1967, okay? And here is General Creighton Abrams, who was the deputy to Westmoreland, saying, quote, "We can't possibly go with the real figures adduced by Sam Adams because we have been projecting an image of success in this war. And there is no way, despite however many caveats we could adduce, that the press in Saigon would draw an erroneous and gloomy conclusion." Okay. August 20th, 1967. McGovern thinks, somebody should take that cable down to the New York Times Bureau in Washington and have them put it on the front page. Now, this is not, I should caution you, this is when the New York Times didn't check with the government before it published things. I mean, there was an even chance the New York Times might put it on the front page. And in retrospect, I said to myself, well, you know, I was scared. I was young. I was making a career. But if WikiLeaks existed at that time, man, I sure as hell would have sent that to Julian Assange. Anyhow, that's a digression. They knew that there were twice as many. That was August 1967. January, February 1968, there was the Tet Offensive, where every village, hamlet, province, and Saigon itself were attacked by the Viet Cong, and there had to be at least 600,000 of them to do that. So this is the kind of deception that top generals do. Now, we had the evidence, right? We had everyone in Washington agreeing with, of course, except for the army, because Westmoreland was running the army, right? Okay, so we went to a director. His name was Richard Helms. And he said, we have to do an estimate on this. We need to get the story out. And we did an estimate. And Helms said, look, my job is to protect the agency, the CIA. And there's no way I can protect the agency if I let you guys get into a pissing war with the US Army at war. So now he folded, and of course, you know the result. That's where intelligence fits into the problem, okay? You know, the generals run things, and there is no CIA director, least of all the last couple of ones that we had, that would dare get into a pissing match, if you want to call it that, with the U.S. Army at war. So if you want to blame somebody, clearly it's the generals running this war. It's the head of CENTCOM, General McKenzie. I mean, what a feckless exercise he ran. I mean, there are ways to do a strategic withdrawal. I mean, we rehearsed them in staff colleges. And I mean, you can do that really, really well. It requires some additional forces initially, and then you get everybody out. You know, it's not as though he did. Well, maybe he is that dumb, but he's dumb as a doornail, or he was playing games. And I'll say this, you know, he's cut from the same cloth as Mattis and others. The Marine generals, they salute, but their first obligation is, like Helms says, toward the CIA, to protect the force, to protect the Marines, okay? Now, if he violently opposes the decision to leave Afghanistan, and he has the moxie to do this, what, you know what he's going to do? As soon as he's told by the president, all right, no more games, everybody out, he's going to make it as messy as it possibly can be to embarrass this president who doesn't know which end is up, right? Okay, so what does he do? Well, after the president makes his decision, then Mattis says gratuitously to the press, okay, we're not going to have any firepower from the air. Air powers can be taken out. We're not going to do anything except if our homeland is attacked, or the homeland of other allies. Whoa. When was that? That was the 14th of June. So did the Taliban maybe listen into that? I think they probably got the word. Did the Afghan army, such as it was, listen in on that? Well, I'm sure they did. And so what kind of conclusion can you take from that, you know? And what happens 3 weeks later? We pull out a Bagram Air Base, an immense sort of thing, leaving behind some helicopters and other aircraft, leaving the prisons to be opened with real terrorists in them. And so, okay, so the 14th of June, Mattis says, no more air power, okay? of course, air power is what was sustaining whatever defense the government was having against the Taliban. And then three weeks later, he makes good on this in the flesh, so to speak, by pulling out a Bagram, I think in the middle of the night, right? So what does that tell? What does that tell the Taliban? I mean, hello, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to say these guys are just going to leave with their tail between their legs. Let's take province by province. Let's not overdo it. Let's make good on these little deals that we've made with the provincial leaders and say, look, look what happened. Look what Mattis is saying. Look what happened at Bagram. Which side are you going to go with now? I said, okay, let's do this little deal. And you know the rest of the story. Over the ensuing weeks, everything fell apart from the government's point of view. The Taliban surged and on a Sunday morning arrived in Kabul. And now the disarray is unconscionable. General McGregor talks about, everyone from General McKenzie, who was in charge, to the defense secretary, to Milley, the chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff. I mean, was there no adult supervision of what should have been an orderly strategic withdrawal? And, not only that, the whole thing was so corrupt, beginning when Obama came in. Of course, started on the Bush, of course. I mean, Bush is responsible. But Obama, after saying during the campaign in 2008, that he wouldn't do stupid wars like Afghanistan, well, he gets into office and who takes over or who continues to rule? The Mickey Matt, right? And you can see them all standing up behind him there when he made the announcement, the fateful announcement on March 24, 2009. We're going to surge. We're in there when you're going, blah, 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 blah. Now, we knew at the time, I wrote at the time, 12 years ago now, that this would, the title of my article is Welcome to Vietnam, Mr. President. And it was clear as a bell to anybody who had a little bit of experience that this is what was going to happen. But the military faced the president down, and Obama didn't have the spine. And most important here, from an intelligence officer point of view, intelligence was cut out of this. Obama himself said in the announcement, we have consulted the military, the State Department, our allies. He doesn't mention intelligence because the divine Petraeus was all-knowing. He knew what was going to happen. Everything's going to be just fine. And I'll get maybe another. So maybe I'll get two more stars, right? And my colleagues, my corrupt colleagues, will get stars too. So Petraeus elbowed out the entire intelligence community. There was no national intelligence estimate, which is always in effect required before you start a war, right? That makes real good sense. Even Johnson and Nixon on Vietnam, they would always come to us. They pretty much knew what they wanted to do, but the estimate would be titled something like expected Russian Chinese reaction to course A. Now, course A was a surge of 70,000 more troops. And we would say, not going to make any difference. You're not going to win. Okay. They say, how about course B five months later? 100,000 troops. Well, you could do that. Russians or Chinese, not going to intervene, but that doesn't matter because the Vietnamese are going to take it to the cleaners anyway. So we were not welcome, but at least we were consulted on Afghanistan. It was clear as a bell in Obama's own words that there was no national intelligence estimate, and the intelligence people were elbowed out. Now, what about this time? Well, history sometimes repeats itself. And if the U.S. Army is at war, intelligence people, even ones with some backbone, I have to go back a couple of decades for that, are not likely to get involved with the U.S. Army in a pissing match with the U.S. Army at war. So if you want to look for the ones immediately responsible, it would be the generals and the admirals. And I still think that someone in the intelligence community should have found some way to tell the media what was really going on here, okay? That this was going to be a disaster. But you know what? There's two things here. You know what happens to whistleblowers right now, okay? And even if you went to the media, as I was tempted to do back in August 1967, this time the media would call up the CIA and say, hey, this guy McGovern, he's telling the blah, 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 blah. And I would be wrapped up and put in the equivalent of Belmarsh prison where my friend Julian Assange now languishes. I should say, by the way, by way of excusing my unkempt appearance, that this is deliberate. This is a sign of solidarity with my friend Julian Assange. This is the way he looked when he was unceremoniously dragged out of the embassy there, in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. That was 2.5 years ago. He's a human being. Much more is at stake, but he's still a human being. And so as a human mark of solidarity, I've been letting this thing grow for, this is what happened, 2.5 years. And I dearly hope, and so does my wife, that Julian will be free soon.
So I wanted to ask, when we're talking about these generals, and I know this will sound like a conspiratorial question almost, but I wonder in the back of my head if Biden and his withdrawal was set up to fail in a way.
I'm sorry? Well, with Biden what?
I wonder if there were forces at work that wanted Biden's withdrawal to fail and kept him out of the loop on things. What do you think of that?
Well, as I suggested with respect to McKinsey's behavior, there are a lot of people really, really angry at Biden for doing what he did. I mean, Biden is not the sharpest knife in the drawer. He's got a coterie of I used to call them sophomores. Now they're rising juniors, okay? They don't know what's going on in the world. And they're advising him, okay? Now, it's easy to take advantage of a guy like this. And he made this announcement that, he was going to do what Trump had initiated. He's not going to do it by May 1st, but he's going to do it by, 9/11, even though Afghanistan had nothing to do with 9/11, all right? But for your listeners or your viewers, yeah, there were some training camps, Al-Qaeda training camps in Afghanistan. But the damn thing was planned in Hamburg and in Kuala Lumpur. You don't need Afghanistan to do 9/11, okay? So that was a fallacy from the beginning. It's just extremely sad how this kind of thing can be allowed to happen. But, you know, the lesson here is that if you don't hold people accountable for disasters, for clearly identifiable disasters like Vietnam. Now, 60 Minutes, when it was a pretty good show, did a 90-minute expose of what my friend Sam Adams said about enemy strength in South Vietnam and how Westmoreland deliberately falsified the books, okay? Sam knew that. Sam went over there and he talked to the analysts and he said, now, okay, let's sit down. I got the OB order of battle figures. I got them right here. Now, here's this company, the 470th. It's a company. We got 120 people. And the Westmoreland analysts said, no, only 60. And Sam said, well, wait a second, 120 is what we carry in all these battalions. No, General Westmoreland says just 60, okay? Then at the bar that night, same guy comes up to Sam. He says, Sam, he's a little bit loaded. He says, Sam, you're not going to succeed here. General Westmoreland says it can't be any more than 299,000. He's probably told Jupp, he's probably told Ho Chi Minh, no more than 299,000. You know, so you go home, you lose, okay? So we knew what was going on, and no one was held accountable. Westmoreland sued CBS, sued 60 Minutes. And guess what? My friend Sam Adams had such integrity that top military people were so impressed, they testified against Westmoreland. They said, Sam Adams is right. Westmoreland lied through his teeth, and so did General Abrams. And finally, Westmoreland withdrew his lawsuit. Now, bottom line here is that he was honored at National Cathedral when he died, and everybody was there applauding Westmoreland. No one was held accountable. Who was held accountable for Iraq? Zero. No one. Now, if no one is held accountable for Afghanistan, you know, these crazy generals, they're talking about, well, we could probably use nuclear weapons. They're not ruled out. They're very possible. We have to use, this is the head of SAC. It's called something else now, the Strategic Air Command. The same people almost got us destroyed in the past, okay? And this guy, Admiral Stavridis, who used to be NATO commander, he's talking about, we're going to have a war with China, maybe 10 years from now, but oh, yeah, it'll be a... Well, now, these guys are crazy. These are really crazy. And if their colleagues are not held accountable for the... What's the word? I won't say the word. For Afghanistan, then they'll be free to go ahead, you know, and get high places, or they already have high places on defense contractor boards. It's really, really insidious. So what I'm saying here is that if things are not really clear as Doug McGregor, Colonel, who's been around for a while, has made, he just talked last night on the TV. He's pessimistic. He says, you know, they cover for each other. There's too much at stake in the Mickey Mat. They won't be held accountable. Well, call me Pollyanna, but I have a lot of faith in the American people. And it seems to be getting out now, if the American people are allowed to be exposed to how horrible this was and how unnecessary and how stupid. I mean, you know, when they did the deal with Obama, okay, Obama says, okay, you can surge it, 30,000, surge it, yeah, but in a year and a half, go back, you know? And you know, you don't have to be an Army intelligence officer, former, to stroke your beard and say, my God, I'm a Taliban, right? And I say, well, I hunkered down for a year and a half, and I'm a hello. It made no sense in any sense. So the generals went along with that because they knew after a year and a half, there'd be more pressure for a surge. And not incidentally, another star on their epaulette.
So before we close out this conversation, I know a lot of people have been trying to say this collapse of the Ghani government in Afghanistan was completely unpredictable. What do you make of that? Because I feel like, you know, a lot of people saw this coming.
Well, yes. I mean, anybody who knew Afghanistan and knew, you know, I'm just thinking an analogy might be, you know, a really good deck that you've built, but it's undermined by termites, you know, and all of a sudden you realize that the termites eating this thing away from within. They're corrupting it, right? And it's going to fall. And so it was, you know, it was a no-brainer that this artificially created government with 300,000 troops, give me a break. Most of them were at home. Most of them were not being paid. Doug McGregor said at most it might have been 50,000 on duty on any given day, and they would run if the Taliban came, unless there were U.S. airstrikes, then they would hang around for a while. So, yeah, it was utterly predictable. What was not predicted was the way the Taliban had these prearranged arrangements, which went in on steroids as soon as Biden said, no, we're going to pull everybody out not by May 1st, but 9/11, no, August 31st. I mean, the handwriting was on the wall. And what people didn't seem to realize is that the Taliban were not going to be real nice guys and you know, wait until they were going to take over the place. And they did, province by province. And then, you know, this rising junior, Antony Blinken, who's our Secretary of State, you know, Maybe this is illustrative of what kind of advice Biden is getting. It was just, 2 weeks ago, he said, now, look, you know, yeah, we expected maybe, you know, maybe the Afghan government wouldn't last very long. But it wasn't like, you know, it was going to happen over a weekend, like from Friday to Sunday. Next Friday, it happens. Sunday, Kabul falls. I mean, if he doesn't get canned, if the National Security Advisor, who's even younger, and you know, none of these guys wore a uniform, by the way. They don't know what war is like. That's really important, okay? You look at China, you look at Russia and see these guys who in the pinstripe thing and make them believe they know something about something. Okay, so, you know, if these guys don't get canned, then I regret to say that Doug McGregor knows a lot more about how this stuff works than I do. So if he's right, then nobody will be held accountable. Look out, folks, because more of our money is going to be diverted to defense, where it should be dedicated to climate change. I mean, after all, there is a existential threat out there, and it's climate change. And I got 10 grandchildren, and they won't have clean air or clean water. And what, you know, what do I do about that? Well, unless we as a people rise up and say, look, this is idiocy. No more wars of this kind. Hold these people responsible, not let it happen again, and give these billions, these trillions to a concerted effort to prevent climate change from being worse than it already is going to be just in one generation.
I like that line too, because I always tell people that I believe that climate change is actually our biggest national security issue. It's an existential threat, and yet we're focused on all these endless wars. And I guess that leads me to the last question I wanted to ask you, which is, you know, if people aren't getting the full picture, what's the bottom line with regards to the cui bono? Who benefits from these forever wars? What's the point? It's certainly not the soldiers and the American people benefiting from it.
Well, it's the Mickey Mat. I mean, pure and simple. But I would point out that you're not alone in your conclusion here about the existential threat. There are now two of us, right? But more significant, I think, is the fact that the Director of National Intelligence, Avril Haines, began her annual threat briefing by saying precisely what you and I have just said. To her credit, she said, look, the main threat for national security is climate change. And we can't do this alone. Even if we devoted all our resources to this, we need the cooperation of nations like China and Russia. We can't do it alone, okay? So in effect, she was saying sotto voce, everything we're going to talk to you about, Iran and, the Russians and the Chinese and, you know, it pales in significance compared to the main problem being climate change, and the main reality being we can't do it alone. There are willing partners. We have to give up all these defense, not all, most of these defense expenditures that go into the pockets of the highfalutin defense contractors. Get serious about this. Say to the Chinese and Russians, look, this is not a zero-sum game, you against us. It's a zero-sum game, us against what's destroying the nice planet that we've been able to live on for a while.
Well, I think that's a great note to end on, unless there's anything you want to add concerning the Afghanistan war and maybe how these wars can be avoided in the future. I guess we would have to hold these generals accountable.
Well, you know, one of my idols, Cesar Chavez, when he was planning something significant like the grape boycott, I made the mistake of buying some grapes during that boycott one time. My wife almost had my head, you know. Anyhow, he's planning this, right? And this is by his account. The people said, well, no, we can't do that. There aren't enough of us. Not enough of us. And he said plaintively, there are enough of us. There are already enough of us. But without action, nothing's going to change. And that's the reality here. There are enough of us. Left, right, we got to get together and do this thing. The last thing I'll say on that kind of score is I have a favorite little principle. I call it the Noah principle. And it's pretty simple. It's no more awards for predicting rain, awards only for building arcs. Okay? Now we go around wringing our hands and say, oh, isn't it awful? And, oh, we know. Okay? That's predicting rain. The rain is here. All right? What kind of arcs are we building? Aren't we smart enough? Aren't we courageous enough to put our necks on the line? Well, I am. I'm a little old, but I still am. And I hope that our fellow citizens will kind of wake up and say, look, we've been fed a whole bunch of malarkey by the mainstream media. They're not going to change much in the future. Now, if ever, is the time to rise up. And in terms of holding people accountable, we don't need a Madame Dufarge waiting outside the Bastille, weaving the names of people next in the guillotine. Now, I'm against capital punishment. I would almost make an exception for people like General McKenzie or General Milley or General Petraeus or General McChrystal. No. Maybe we could exile them to the Isle of Elba. That was really good for Napoleonic folks, okay? But what we need to do really is move out and not wait for these people that be held accountable. Hold the people accountable that we elect. Hold the people accountable who are blasting this propaganda at us 24/7. And we could do that. There are enough of us. Cesar Chavez was right.
And I just wanted to add to that very briefly. Do you think that it's a hopeful sign? We're seeing, you know, the media is attacking the withdrawal. They're not just going after any blunders with the exit strategy. They're going head on, Biden bad, and they're really attacking him hard for the withdrawal. But the American people seem to be still supportive of the withdrawal. So I guess that proves your point in a lot of ways.
Well, wait a month. The Mickey Met controls the media, controlled by six mega corporations. And as long as there's more profiteering in waging wars, building armaments, stuffing the pockets of Congress people, appropriating more money for armaments, then, you know, I'll add one little vignette here. I don't believe everything, or I don't share the views of Pope Francis very much. But he had it right on when he came before Congress about 5 years ago. And in the middle of his speech, he says, you know, the main problem are the blood-drenched arms traders. And these senators and representatives got up on their feet. It was giving hypocrisy a bad name. And then if you look closer, you see look in their pockets to see if the last envelope from Raytheon was here and the one from Lockheed over here. I mean, it was really despicable because these are the guys that are funding and getting funded by the Mickey Mat. The Mickey Mat is here, but it's not invincible. Again, there are enough of us.
Well, Ray McGovern, I want to thank you for coming on Parallax Views. How can my listeners keep up with your work and your writings?
Well, I have a website that's run by my youngest son. It's called, got a pencil? RayMcGovern.com. Not hard to remember. He spent 2 weeks not long ago making it really, really easily searchable. So there's a little search when you want to see what I've been saying for the last 15 years, I think, now on that website. Just search it. I do write regularly, and I speak a lot, and sometimes I speak too long. I witnessed what just happened.
Well, thank you again, Ray McGovern.
You're most welcome.
Well, that does it for this edition of Parallax Views. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Ray McGovern. As always, if you appreciate the work I do here at Parallax Views, please consider supporting me on Patreon at patreon.com/parallaxviews. That's patreon.com/parallaxviews. By this weekend, I hope to have some new content up for $5 tier and up supporters. Also, at the $10 and $15 tiers, you get a producer's credit shout-out, which leads us to the shout-outs for this edition of the show. Shout-outs to Gunner, Spartacus, Ed, James, Jamie, Catherine, Orc, Holland, Nathan, Mark, Martin, The War Nerd, Emilia, Brian, Mickey, Gratz, and Chase. If you'd like your very own producer's credit on each and every edition of the show, well, then consider joining those listeners in supporting me at the $10 or $15 tiers of my Patreon page. Also at the $15 tier, you can request to speak with me, my time permitting, on Skype or Zoom for a monthly chat. Again, time permitting, just shoot me an email if you're at the $15 tier and want to do that. I like to provide some access to myself for that tier of supporters. And with that being said, until next time, you've been listening to Parallax Views with Parallax Views. To Parallax Views with Parallax Views.
The way out is not simply to say don't do it, just to prohibit. It's nothing else. If we don't do it, others will be doing it like crazy. So, you know, we have to confront the problem. But no, basically, I know of the great anxieties, problems, new forms of control, but it's also new forms of freedom. This is why I always emphasize that internet and all this new digital stuff, it's a very ambiguous phenomenon, but it's the field of struggle. New forms of enslavement, but at the same time, new incredible forms of freedom. We have to accept the fight. With no nostalgia for old, allegedly more authentic communities or whatever. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid.